morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to Always Get Lost, the podcast about life and travel abroad. My name is Angela Carson. I am very happily your host today. Today's guest is Zara Janjua. I met her on a flight from Thailand to Malaysia in 2018 and have followed her in awe ever since. She's an award-winning broadcast and radio presenter for well-known channels like the BBC. Zara has also just won a spot on the BBC Comedy Writers Room 2020, and she's been shortlisted for the Funny Women Comedy Writing Award for 2020. She's a podcaster, documentary film director, comedian, writer, and an advocate for equality, women's rights, and mental health, and just an all-around joy to listen to. I am proud to welcome Zara as my first female storyteller today. Trust me, you are in for a real treat and a bunch of stories that are going to make you want to grab that passport as soon as borders open and head out. That's big balls, like big balls.
I will take that. I have a big metaphorical set of cojones.
Yes, you do. Okay, the order. So we've changed your road trip now to Nepal, which was quite recent.
Yes.
So maybe we should go first exotic family holiday. I still think that's kind of nice to show because yours would have been when you were young as well.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It was in the 80s.
Okay, mine was in the 70s, but I'm a lot older than you. So I was probably 7 or 8.
You went to Hawaii when you were 7 or 8?
Couple times, yeah. But it was just, it's the next state over from California.
I am so envious of your life. Honestly, my dad, anyway, I'll save it for the recording, but.
Okay, so let's go. First exotic family holiday, then summer job in Spain.
Okay, summer job in Spain. Love that. Love yours.
And then let's go favorite road trip. And maybe we'll let that one just be you because I kind of see my Jeep story because I was almost raped. I got shot at. Like that one I could probably turn into a podcast all its own.
Bloody hell, Angela.
Oh, it was really fun though, too. I had a great time. Like, it was a fabulous 2 months, but it was very dangerous for
Angela,
a 20.
You just told me you were raped.
No. Almost raped. He broke in, but someone came in before he did anything. But he went to jail. He went to prison. It was, it turned out fine.
But bloody
then
hell.
I had to go clear my head. I thought, you know, I was in Mexico and I thought, I'll drive down to Acapulco and do a little road trip, you know, and that'll clear my head. And then I was shot at and had to sleep in a ditch, like running from bandits on a mountain road and 20-year-old girl, blonde with my bikini and my Jeep. Like it was just so stupid. It was very stupid.
I mean, it's an experience for sure. Experience. It was life. Yeah.
Okay. So I think we do the road trip because I did a road trip in India with my daughter. But it wasn't a massive road trip, but it was like the last time she and I had a super trip before she went off to university and everything sort of changed. Okay, so I've done the intro. So now I just have to welcome you. This is going to be a shit show.
I think you should keep all this bit in. I think you should keep this bit in. This is awesome.
You are just the worst person to have as my experience. It's so intimidating.
Oh, please. No way. I am also probably the most easygoing person. I hope that, you know, you will experience that as well. But I firmly believe in life. You have to find your own way of doing things. And I really respect everyone's sort of individuality and the way that they approach things. And there's not one way to do anything. And I just love seeing what people individually bring to projects and creative work like this. So, you know, I'm learning all the time and I always feel like I will continue learning because I have that sort of attitude. And I have no doubt, Angela, no pressure, but I know I'm going to learn something from you today.
Okay.
Many things from you today.
I love you so much. All right. Well, hippity hop, little bunnies, let's get started. I am so excited to have you, Zara. This is just a wonderful gift for me as a new podcaster to have someone like you as my first female storyteller. So thank you.
I'm your first female storyteller. Thank you so much for having me. I mean, that feels amazing, but it's also just incredible to be part of this because you are exceptional. I watch a lot of what you do online and I feel so blessed to be part of this for you. So thank you very much for having me on.
You are too sweet. I love you so much. Okay, guys. So what I want to do is to just have a chat with Zara and welcome you in to be a fly on the wall. Imagine us at an airport bar somewhere. Both of our flights are delayed and we are going to shoot the shit for, I don't know, as long as we do, swapping stories. And we have a few ideas in mind, including our first memories of exotic family holidays when we were little girls, a summer job in Spain, which Zara and I have both had, but they were very
crazy.
It's wild. Then getting out into nature and hiking, and we're gonna cap it off with our favorite road trip that expanded our minds. So I think you should kick it off, Zara. And you are going to talk about your first exotic family holiday.
Yeah, well, so my father is from Pakistan. My mum is Scottish. And actually, she looks very Scottish. So she is little ginger, red hair woman, you know, very pale. So I always think, you know, that kind of sparked my interest in comedy, because how could I have these two comical characters in my life growing up and not turn to comedy, right? So I always felt a bit like Haggis Pecora growing up. That was my, if I was a food, that's what I would have been. And when we were really young, my father never took us on holidays. He ran his own business. He had a car firm. And we were never allowed to go.
He had a car farm? An automobile farm?
This is like a bot farm. No, a firm. Like a legal firm.
Am I saying it weird?
No, this is
a car farm. Like a farm for automobiles.
No, it's like a sci-fi farm that exists in the future. We've come back. No, I'm kidding. That's exactly it. So a car firm. He bought and sold cars, like Matilda's dad, but, you know, not as dodgy. Not as dodgy. Okay. So he would never allow us to go anywhere abroad, usually, because he needed to have signal for his mobile phone. And if we did go on holiday, it was usually caravan parks and things. It was really, really dull. I wanted to go to Disneyland. I wanted to go and explore. We went to Pakistan when I was 6 years, 5 years old, for a while. We were there for almost 4 months, actually, because we...
Wow.
I know, it was a really long time. But my cousin was getting married. There was lots of things going on out there. And even though I was only 5 or 6 at the time, I remember so much about it. So my father took us to a village in Chakwal, Rawalpindi, which is where he was born and brought up. So like the road was just this kind of really arid landscape. And I remember there being a big drop, lots of salt plains, bathing with the buffalo in the morning. I had a bakri, a little goat that was my pet, which we then slaughtered on Eid, but sorry for all the veggies out there. You know, just devastating as a child, big life lesson that I learned very young. But I remember being out in the village and it was just a complete assault on your senses, because I'd never experienced anything like that before. The heat.
And if your mom is Scottish, she wasn't cooking up Pakistani food at home. So,
oh, she was. Oh, are you kidding me? That was like one of the, yeah. So like when my mom and dad, so my mom, oh my God, I know it's amazing. So, which is fantastic, because my mom and dad have now been married for 40 years and she cooks the most incredible Pakistani food. And she, it was one of the kind of, one of the requirements, should I say, of my dad got married. I don't know how my mom did it, honestly, but he told her, you know, when they got married, they went to Pakistan, and her wedding pictures are her dressed head to toe in traditional Pakistani wedding dress. It's like this beautiful bright red and gold shalwar out in the village. She got married and she learned to cook desi, you know, traditional desi Pakistani food. So she's been cooking that now for, as I say, 40 years. So yeah, she did cook that at home, but we didn't have... Just the, loads of fruits. I remember like these amazing lychee, or going to the bazaars and having fresh mango milkshakes and mango lussies. You know, there was a really, it was a really special experience for us being out in the village. But also my, and this is a bit bougie, this is a sort of bougier side. My family in Pakistan are all involved in politics and in the army. My surname is Janjua, and it's a very sort of military name. And my aunt, my father's older sister, married the general of the army in Pakistan. And so we went to the Muhammad Ali Jinnah House in Lahore. He was the founder of Pakistan. And so he gave his home in Lahore to the army. And that's where we lived. So we had like a wing of the house. We had a Batman. We had a, you know, it was, there were peacocks in the garden. There were fireflies. There was a mango orchard. And it just felt like a fairy tale really growing up. And, you know, the probably the biggest and the most amazing experience for me was being there for the wedding, because, you know, you probably know this from watching films, or if you've got any friends that are Indian or Pakistani, that the weddings go on for weeks.
No, I like, lived in India for 3 years, and I went to a village wedding where it was 3 hours outside the city, and it went on for 3 days, and there were 3,000 guests.
It's big, brash, beautiful, you know, very colorful, very vibrant. You know, the Bhangra drums banging as you enter. I just want the food, the music. Mendis are usually hosted, they're hosted by the women's side of the family, and everyone does a dance, and like whole family members, it's like a thing that like the girls in the family do a dance, the boys in the family do a dance, you know, the aunts and uncles, maybe, you know, mum and dad on one side do a dance. And it's really fun. It's really, really fun watching everyone kind of making a fool of themselves. Back then it was very traditional, and it was very military. There were, you know, garlands of rose petals decorating the walls, and the whole place just smelt like this kind of like sweet mango floral scent everywhere. I remember being out in the garden trying to catch fireflies, and we just had the best time. You know, as a kid, being exposed to that heat and stuff as well was just amazing. We really felt like it was a unique experience. It was different. And, you know, I don't remember much from my childhood, which is weird, isn't it? Like, I don't have very vivid memories from most of my childhood, because most of it was pretty dull, you know. And that's actually something, an issue I had growing up. I was like, mum and dad, why can't you be mean to me? Or why can't I have a, you know, what? I really want to have a crap. I wanted adventure. I wanted them to like put me up for adoption, or to like, you know, send me away to school somewhere. Or
you always want what you can't have, but that is very extreme. Know, right? Sara, that is very extreme.
I was a troubled writer. You know, I always knew I was going to be a writer, and I just felt.
Oh, like you need pain.
I needed pain. I needed experience, and my family were just too nice and too normal, and everything was going too well, and I really resented them for it.
Okay, I'm not following down this dark path of yours. Can't believe that there were fireflies that you were catching at the wedding and...
That's yeah, it. I mean, well, that was in Lahore. So, I mean, we did a bit of a tour of Pakistan while we're there, because the other thing that, I mean, I haven't been back since then. And if I'm being honest, one of the things that's put me off going back is that I am a bit of a free spirit, and I do like to roam wild and free like the buffalo. So I know when I go to Pakistan, I remember just being paraded around houses, and all we did was eat. And Pakistanis have this thing of like, when you go to their house, they will bring out like a tray of food, like trays of desserts, or they'll push this tray out and you have to sit and eat. And I just remember being force fed all the time, being made to drink this thing called Ru Afza, which was like rose flavored cordial, but they would put it into like warm milk or warm buffalo milk. And it was disgusting. But it was apparently it was like quite a lovely thing to give to children, or
maybe as an adult. To give to children.
Oh my God! Yes, I was like six at the time, and I was being force fed this floral milk stuff that made me sick. You know, and but being force fed, and we were just so bored because we were learning. We learned a bit of Urdu. We learned Arabic, but we didn't really know how to speak the language. And so when they'd be sitting talking, we'd just be really bored. And there was lots of talking and eating and eating and talking and talking and eating and more Rosa. And it just became, you know, it was, there were parts of it where we just wanted to be outside playing or, you know, escaping. And I certainly know now as a 35-year-old woman that if I was to go back to Pakistan, there would be even more of that now.
And you have to do it on the down low and not tell the family.
Oh my gosh, right? Well, I'm trying to find a way of going out to film a documentary there. So it's like I have the excuse of work.
Structure. You know, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, got a call. Got to go.
Yeah. Or no, we've got something booked that day. We, you know, it's work. And they understand work, you know, because Pakistanis have a fantastic work ethic. So if you say you have to work, you have to work.
Your escape hatch. That's amazing.
You need one though, right?
I would love to go to Pakistan. I think because I know how beautiful India was, and that's, you know, one of its closest neighbors, and the diversity of what you can see and just the kindness of people and the food.
Malala.
Is so amazing.
Oh my God. Well, the food is like, I mean, I miss that so much. You know, being away from my parents at the moment, I moved down to London, and I'm going back to Scotland at the end of this week. It'll be the first time I've been back in about 4 months, and the food's definitely something that I've been missing. But you know, there's lots to love about Pakistan. There's lots that we don't see. I think that there's been a real shift in terms of, you know, the media output and the way it's portrayed in films and TV series and, you know, even on the news. But Malala, in her book, she wrote about her opening scene is she's out in rural Pakistan, and that it is paradise. There's beautiful, beautiful waterfalls, forests, lakes, rivers, you know, mountains. There's a whole world out there that's just so beautiful and so adventurous. And that's the side of Pakistan that I'm really, really keen to go and see, because it's not what we did when we were children. And over lockdown, my father and I have become much closer. We've been talking every day, making a real effort with each other. And we've said that we will go together to Pakistan again next year, which I'm really looking forward to. But I've made him promise that we can go and do one of the kind of outdoor adventures. So whether that's, you know, he's in his 70s now, so I won't quite get him kayaking or canoeing.
Yeah.
I won't get him doing that. But certainly to go and stay in one of these rural places for a week or so to just get out and to do a few walks and to do some exploring, to see the side of Pakistan that my father fell in love with as a child, you know. He didn't fall in love with all the meeting and eating. He fell in love with the, you know, the great outdoors. And that's the kind of side that I'm really, really keen to see.
The peacocks. You had me at peacocks.
I'm quite jealous and envious of your childhood, because I was saying that I didn't particularly get much of a chance to go to, like, all my friends were going to Disneyland, or they'd say that they were going out to France or America. And as I said, like, we were just never allowed to do any of that.
Being born in Southern California does offer quite a diverse array of things to do just in your back door. So Disneyland, I mean, we used to go twice a year to Disneyland. We had the beach. My parents divorced when I was quite young, and Dad lived at the beach. It was the 70s. And he actually, when they divorced, he got a perm in his hair. He bought a boat and he moved right on the beach. It was like, I guess that's what you did back then. And so it was great, but Dad worked for United.
He sounds like a character.
He passed away a little over a decade ago.
I'm sorry.
15 years? Yeah, he had just retired early. He had worked for United Airlines, and he and my stepmom retired early and were building their dream house in Oregon. And they raised Arabian horses and miniature poodles. And they were all there. It was 2 weeks away from being done, and they were in a car accident. It was terrible. So,
I'm so sorry.
But, oh no, but I have so many fun childhood memories with my dad, because Mom worked, and, you know, back then the women did everything and they were divorced. And so all the fun stuff was with Dad. And, you know, Mom got to be the disciplinarian, and she had to watch her money and all that. So one of my favorites was Hawaii. And because Dad worked with United Airlines, back in the 70s, each family member would get a ticket book. And you literally, it was before they stopped you at the before coming to the gates. You could just walk in, go to whatever gate you wanted, write the destination on the ticket, and then you pulled it out of this booklet and you passed it to them and you'd be on the wait list. And so Dad took us to Hawaii. I must have been 7, 8. And the first time I went to Hawaii, it was just, it was so different to Southern California, because already living at the beach half of the time, you know, it's beautiful. SoCal's it's lovely. But Hawaii was something completely different. I still do remember the colors of the water, which are very different to Southern California waters. They're not, it's not the same. And on that trip, I stayed in a really nice hotel for the first time. And that was pretty magic, with the tiny bottles and the, you know, the room service, and Dad would tip, and it was, you know, having to behave ourselves in a slightly different way than normal, because the rest of our holidays were generally at the river, because he had the boat now. So, you know, we went to the Colorado River, but it was the first trip where I saw a waterfall, and I can still remember, and I was so young, and it's like you were saying, I don't remember vivid snapshots of my normal life, but I have vivid snapshots, like in my mind, I can almost see it as a Polaroid. And I remember this waterfall with a swimming pool below it that was, the waters were so transparent, you could see down to the bottom. They were crisp and cool, which was amazing because you were just so crazy hot.
I think it's crazy that you went to Hawaii as a child. Like, I mean, crazy in a great way. And like, I can just see our lives side by side, me in my caravan park, you in Hawaii, and me being insanely jealous of it.
Okay, the
coming
caravan,
back from school and exchanging stories.
No, the caravan park is just like my dad taking us to the river and camping the rest of the time. So don't, Pakistan is international. Hawaii was still domestic. And we didn't pay for tickets.
Yeah,
we just paid the tax on them. So it was kind of like Dad got away with really cheap holidays, even though it's...
He got a good deal, didn't he?
He did a guy. All of that, you know, just... Because I can still remember the drives back and forth to the Colorado River as well. And just seeing that landscape of Arizona with the rocks and the kind of the same as seeing the volcanoes in Hawaii or the waterfalls.
What did you eat in Hawaii? Because like, I don't actually know much about the food in Hawaii at all.
I remember drinking when they take sugar cane and they squeeze it to make the juice. I remember having that because Hawaii is a major sugar producer, exporter. And that was insane. I never had that again fresh until I lived in India decades later.
I mean, yeah, that abundance of fresh fruit and vegetables. I've lived in a city for most of my life and in the UK, and I realize that we don't always have the reputation for having the best food in the UK, but certainly not when it comes to fruit and vegetables. And that is something I wholly embrace and appreciate when I go abroad, is that abundance of fresh produce. What you've just described there is something that in London we would pick up for like £8, £9 for a glass of it. And I love that when you're on holiday to these places that it's like a really standard thing just to enjoy, and it feels so good for you and so healthy and fresh.
Well, what you have to import, the rest of the world just has sitting outside their door. Yeah. So for me right now, I'm sitting in the Riau Islands in Indonesia. I'm literally looking out and there are banana trees in front and papaya trees in front of my apartment.
That's just insane.
It's amazing. So when they're ripe, we have to fight the monkeys for them. But it's amazing what we take for granted sometimes and what other people take for granted and don't see as exotic and special.
I mean, I'm sitting in my house in London right now looking at a half-dead cactus plant in front of me. So the contrast is striking, really.
And just so everyone knows, I'm actually sweating because I can't put my fan on above me and it is hella hot. Zara is in a sweatshirt in London.
Oh my gosh. London is getting cold. London is summer has passed. I do appreciate you actually look great. You look like you've got
I
just
look
like a really nice,
purple.
because I can see you right now because we're on, Zoom recording this. So I can see that you look really healthy and fresh. And I love that feeling. Do you want to swap lives? Do you want to, why don't we do a house swap?
No, I don't want to swap. I do enjoy my little life. Thank you. You're fanning me.
Trying to.
Zara and I actually both lived in Spain, and neither of us knows each other's story. But I want to hear about the summer job you had that you took sight unseen from a man sitting next to you on an airplane.
Oh my God, right. So when I was, in fact, I'm going to prefix it by saying that my mother is the most adventurous woman I've ever met. And she, grew up in the slums of Glasgow and at 17 decided to run away and join the army and travel the world. And she had the most incredible life. And there was some advice that she always gave me from a young age and that has really prepared me for life. And it's because of the advice that she gave me that I went on to do a lot of the things that I've done. One of them was to never wait for anyone if you want to do something. Don't wait for friends, don't wait for anyone. If you want to go and see something, if you want to go and do something, be prepared to go alone and enjoy it. And that's kind of I've moved a lot in life and I've done a lot in life and I've done a lot alone because of that advice. So
I have done that too. It's a lot of solo travel, starting from when I was 20 and went to
wow,
Mexico for the first time. That was solo because none of my friends could go. I just thought, F it, I'm going. No,
But
that's
then
great
that,
advice. That's great
but
advice.
this is the problem is that quite often, if we don't have the confidence to go and embrace these experiences by ourselves, often if we're waiting for friends, if you say to people, why don't we go to Mexico? Do you want to go and work in Spain for the summer? People will go, yeah, that sounds great. Oh, yeah, let's do that. But when it comes
Follow
down to
through.
it, very few people will follow through on it. And it's very difficult unless you're, the kind of person that can get people to put deposits down on holidays. And I've got a friend like that, Angela. She's very good at that. Her name's Angela as well. And she's very, very good at getting people to sign up. So Angela's just have a way of getting people to do things, don't they, Angela's? You've got a lot to answer for,
Yes,
Angela.
hello, Angela.
So I had been wanting to go to work in Spain for the summer. The university degree that I was doing, my undergraduate degree, was in business management. And we had an extra long break that was about 6 months long. And so I only had about 6 months worth of course to do. And I asked a few friends at the beginning of the year, should we go out and do something in Spain? Should we go out and get a job? And no one was really. I mean, people said that they were up for it, but as it was getting closer and closer to the time that we were going to be, I was going to be left and I was studying in Edinburgh. And I thought, I just don't want to spend a summer working in a bar, a restaurant in Edinburgh. I want to go somewhere else. And, if I can do it somewhere else for 6 months, I'll do it somewhere else for 6 months.
What city were you looking at in Spain?
I didn't really look that much. I
See what
wasn't,
cheap flights there were?
that's exactly what I did.
I did.
I was like, right, I can get a flight out for £14. So I'm going to take that one and I'll figure it out when I get there. And I had enough
Good
money that I
girl.
was going to just, yeah, thanks. I thought I'll just go and see, meet some people and see how it goes. But yeah, when I jumped on the flight, I got myself a drink, a little vodka and soda, sat down, nestled in, and started to chat with this guy next to me who was British and owned a couple of bars out in Spain. And he was going out, he'd been back home seeing family. And he asked me what I was doing. I said I was going to go and look for a job. We spent the whole flight having a chat about our lives and about his bars. And we were going out to Salou, so it's near Valencia. So we were going out to Salou, and I couldn't quite believe my luck.
That's amazing. Well, and he must have come off as a trusting person for you to, I mean, you kind of get it. Hey, you and I sat next to each other on a flight. You get a feel for how someone is and your instinct kicks in. So what did he offer?
I mean, I'll say that, Angela, but also I do think that having alcohol probably makes me a bit more trusting. I was about four vodkas down. So he said that he owned a couple of bars out in Spain. And not only that, there was a job and accommodation available. So
that's
he
amazing.
Had this like, I know, it's crazy,
it
isn't it?
It wasn't that, in his house in like an adjoining room, right?
In his dungeon downstairs. No, thankfully not. he had this 6-person accommodation out in a place called Cambrils, which was about a 20-minute walk from the restaurant. And it was just this beautiful walk all along the coastline. So I just felt a bit bizarre, though, because I hadn't booked any hotels. I hadn't booked anything. I totally thought I'll be there for maybe a week to 10 days before I find something. And the entire way out, I spent, you know, 2 to 3 hours speaking to this man on the plane about his life, his background, his family. Found out about him and he, you know, he asked me about what I was doing and he thought it was perfect. And it was, because when we arrived, I went with him in a cab. I mean, my mother would have been like, what the hell were you thinking? As adventurous as she was, you know, sorry, Mum. So yeah, I did get in a cab with him and went to see his restaurant. And he had a lot of, other British people working in the restaurant, and it made it in a sense a bit easier because I didn't know Spanish. So, you know, for me that was like, you know, it was great to be working around people that at least I would be able to communicate with. But there were enough Spanish working there that I was also able to learn some Spanish. So that's exactly, you know, what I'd been hoping for. But also, it was a nice pub. It was a nice bar. Decent food, right on the beach, and a 20-minute walk home every day. So yeah, I mean, that was one of the best experiences I had out there. On the first day, I met a guy. There's always a guy, isn't there?
There's always a guy.
When you're like, when you're in your early 20s, especially, there was always a guy.
So
I met a guy out there, and him and I, we were together for the kind of five months that I worked in the bar. And happened to meet him on the first day, and then we went traveling together around Europe when we finished. So it kind of all worked out fairly well. You know, I just love the change in lifestyle. You know, working and living in Spain was quite an experience because it taught me and exposed me to a new language, a new culture. I mean, I'm again going to say the abundance of fresh fruit and vegetables.
Amazing in Spain.
Honestly, the figs and stuff especially were just amazing.
Your end story of how your Spanish work holiday ends and mine are completely opposite. They both had the same trajectory up until the very end, and then mine takes a very different turn to yours.
Speak to me.
Are you ready? Okay. So I bought a one-way ticket to Europe. Again, I picked the city that was the cheapest from Los Angeles. It was the year after my Mexico trip. And I had decided, okay, I'm going to go someplace safer because that seems smart. So I was checking all the cities in Europe. I just knew I wanted a Eurail. You know, I wanted a Eurail pass and I wanted to go explore. Amsterdam was the cheapest. I think it was like $250 US or $300. It was some special. But Amsterdam was too cold, Paris was too expensive, north of Spain was too cold, Pamplona was, you know, meh. And so ended up in this seaside village south of Barcelona called Sitges. And in the winter, it's a sleepy little village. In the summer, it is hella fun. And it turns into this big touristy place where it goes from 8,000 inhabitants to like 36,000 inhabitants. When we arrived, I was with a girlfriend. We had traveled together. When we arrived, I'm like, okay, we need to get jobs. I'm down to the last, you know, bit of money I didn't go over with very much. And I said, I'm going to go out and try to look for a job. And she's like, yeah, okay. After the first day, I came back and she had like an older, wealthy gentleman that was now her money source and didn't have any interest in looking for work. I was like, screw that. I am never going to be beholden to a man to have my allowance or rent or anything. So I wasn't having any of that. She and I ended up not really being good friends. We ended up just, I couldn't abide by her life. Like, her life choice just really annoyed the hell out of me. Because that's not how we're supposed to be, independent and like the same as men, not, yeah. You know.
She probably had a great time, to be fair. I mean, if it was sheer hedonism, without any of the other stuff about, you know, what legacy are we leaving for future women and what does it say about me as a person and my morals, then, you know, she had a great time, I'm sure.
Maybe. Okay, and everyone should live the life that they want. Just at the time, I had very high, that was very ooey to me.
Love you.
When I was 20.
I really love
you. And she ended up not having the greatest time because she was very embarrassed to be seen out in public with him, and he was quite happy to be seen out in public with her.
I bet he was.
It kind of made me happy that had that. Anyway, I digress. So
no, I love it.
I ended up finding a job with kind of the coolest disco in the center of town. There was another disco that is quite famous that was on the beach, like outside of town. But this one was like right in the middle on one of the main, you know, old streets in the village, called Ricky's. And I met Ricky because I was walking around going to all the bars and pubs and asking for work. He gave me a job. He also, like, I did my first line of cocaine, I remember, and like ecstasy.
Whoa, this escalated quickly.
Yeah.
The minute we're talking about waterfalls, and like, there was some gambas chucked in there, and the next minute.
Yeah, no, it got naughty.
Don Corleone.
But it was fun.
Okay, and Scarface.
So he gave me a job passing out tickets in the plaza, you know, in the main center of town. And I basically just stood there with a couple of Spanish guys. And we're like, Ricky's? Esta noche, Ricky's? You know, tonight, Ricky's? And passing out tickets to people. And, you know, when they paid the entrance, they got a free drink or whatever. So we'd go out, you know, at 11 p.m. By about 2 a.m., we needed to be back at the club. And then we had to dance and have fun and like have a drink so that the club looked like it was bouncing when people would come in, when really it was dead. That was the job for a while, but I can actually dance really, really well. And there was,
I bet you can.
There was this stairwell that led to the VIP area. And I would stand on the stairs and kind of like get my rocks off on, you know, a good song would come on. I'd get up there and like shake my tail feathers. And Ricky came up one night and he's like, look, you know, so I was thinking maybe we can build a podium for you next to the DJ booth and you can be the dancer for the summer. And I'll give you twice the salary and a budget for clothes because, you know, sweetie, you need clothes. He's like, these American things that you brought with you, you're not going to work on the podium.
Just like, no way.
The purple leggings and the cutoff jean shorts with the
this is turning into a scene from Hustlers. Or like,
no, it was, I wasn't a stripper. I mean, I was like a normal, you know, like the cute girl in the birdcage from the 60s, but not 60s. It was quite funny. They really did send a Spanish girl to help me get appropriate clothing because.
So what clothing did you get?
Like cute dresses and things like that. I mean, just normal European clothes that I later learned were normal instead of the American comfort wear that, you know,
yeah, I hear you.
Hoochie mama clothes of the 90s and things. It was like 1990, 1992, I guess, 1993, the year after the Olympics.
The Spanish fashion is just great though, isn't it? Because everything I notice is really small. Because, you know, the frames are much smaller generally, but they have the most beautiful little, like, short white little dresses. And they're just, like, look like everything is designed for dancing. Everything.
Well, and they don't... See, I'm quite conservative with how I dress anyway. I'm not a plungy neckline kind of girl or a, like, everybody's my gynecologist kind of length kind of girl. So I was kind of okay in that regard. And Spanish women in Barcelona dress quite conservative, but fashion. Like there's never body parts showing.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, they took me shopping because I needed it so bad. I really did have purple leg warmers and like UGG boots. And And no one had UGG boots. They thought that I was wearing ski boots. It was 1993.
Shut up.
And yeah, I had rollerblades, and people would stop their cars on the street to watch because they had never seen rollerblades in 1993 in Barcelona.
Oh my God. So now on like the promenade and stuff down by the beach in Barcelona, they're everywhere, you know, like that's a really common sight.
Yep.
You started that trend, Angela.
Yes.
That was you. That was your legacy in Spain.
Well, so the new job as a go-go dancer was really fun. And I do remember telling my mom about the job. And I said, oh, Mom, it's so great. I work half the hours now and I get twice the amount of money. And she's like, sweetie, so you leave your clothes on, right? I was like, yeah, Mom.
Just to clarify.
Mom, I'm like, imagine the 60s, you know, with the girl with the peace sign painted on her and she's in a cage. Okay. But you do leave them on, right? Yes, Mom, I leave them on.
It sounds too good to be true, right? Doesn't it? Twice the money, half the time.
It was so much fun. And then because I was a dancer there, I could go to the other club that was like really amazing. It was this outdoor club where people got properly dressed to go. And I mean, there was a clothing requirement to that one. Like men had to be in shirts and belts and a jacket, and women had to have very fashionable attire. So I could dance on the catwalk that went out over the dance floor there as well. Anyway, it was just the most fun summer. And just spend every day on the beach, go home, take a nap, take a shower, get ready, go to work, repeat. It was so much fun.
A great lifestyle. And I think, you know, when you're young, then that's like you have the energy for that, don't you? The late nights, even early mornings, you're fully accepting of like the siestas, sleeping on the beach, you know, a much more relaxed lifestyle. You know, now I feel I'm so glad I did that all then, because, you know, my life now is incredibly busy and I just can't imagine like that being okay with that level of chill. I have stuff that I need to do, you know, I've got business now, things going on, and I'm, you know, I think I'm really grateful for that. It sounds like you and I had a similar time around
yes,
that time.
Okay,
no but... one would have paid me to dance though. People would have paid me not to dance, I think. So that's the
I don't believe that that's true, but we will see that in person someday soon.
I hope so.
So mine though ended very different, because on the last week that I was supposed to be in Spain, I was planning to go to Italy next, and I just wanted to continue traveling. I had saved up all summer. I had money. I was ready to go. And that last week, I ended up meeting my ex-husband. I met him literally within a few days of me leaving, and he convinced me to stay. It was just this big romantic gesture, and it was dinner with all the seafood, and he had this... these really tight jeans and like Spanish boots and a fast motorbike. And
you've just ticked about five of my top 10 boxes there. Tight jeans, seafood, motorbike. I mean, he's like, not he was surprised. It's like a scene from a movie.
No, he was a bad boy. And then that does like end up having its problems later, which is how we divorced like so soon. But I ended up not leaving and continuing to travel because I met him. Which the amazing part of that is I have my daughter now. That is my greatest joy. But I was supposed to continue on like you were. It just, like, life somehow got in the way and changed things, which in the end has been a blessing. But yeah, it's quite interesting. But Spain's, it welcomes home those that need a little bit of Spanish lifestyle to get them back on track or to appreciate what they have or as an escape.
I love your stories. Honestly, I could listen to your stories all day. And even like, I think that relationship, love is like, life is about love. Let's just be honest. It really is. I will fall in love at any opportunity. And I think if I had the opportunity to stay and enjoy, you know, a great relationship, then I might have done the same.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, we have literally gotten to about half of what I wanted to talk to with you. Will you agree to come on for a part two? And I'm just going to label this part one. And
babe, I would love to.
Okay,
are you kidding? Really? That would be awesome. That would really be cool.
I am completely labeling this part one then and committing you to the obligation.
I'm saying it. I am so committed. Angela, I am committing to you.
Oh, my darling.
Thank I have committed. But also, you know, it's just really nice being able to talk about holidays right now and escapes at a time when, you know, we're off the back of lockdown. And, you know, I certainly haven't been able to, you know, commit to being away again this year and since lockdown. And, you know, it's lovely. This is great. It's reigniting my passion, my joy. It's making me look forward to going away again. And I have no doubt that we'll get away again. And I actually have no doubt that I'll meet you again at some point.
I do know we'll do that.
Yeah, I think so too.
Will you tell listeners what they should check out on your channel or what's coming up for you? That would be fun for them to,
absolutely.
To subscribe to.
So I am on Twitter and Instagram at TV Zara J. That's probably the best place to come and hang out and say hello. At the moment, I'm doing a lot of comedy. I've just been commissioned to make a few BBC sketches. So I am at the moment writing and crewing up to do them. I've got I wish I could say a bit more. I've actually got a couple of podcasts of my own coming up. So there's quite a lot going on that I can't fully reveal just yet. But I would love to, if you are trying to break into the industry and you need some help, especially if you're quite young, quite new to this, I do a lot of mentoring and I'd be, you know, really keen to help and promote, especially young minority women. So come and say hello.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Zara, for being here. Thank you so much for being my first female storyteller.
I
adore you. You're the best.
I adore you.
I will see you in the next one.
I hope so. Yes, please.
Okay.
Yes, please.
It's been the
Thanks,
biggest.
Angela.
Ciao.
You take care. Bye, darling.
Bye.